across occupied Palestine. Popular protests opposing the ongoing Israeli military occupation continue weekly. Focusing in many regions of the Palestinian West Bank on the Israeli apartheid wall, labeled by Israel a security fence, a maze of electrified razor wire towering in many regions to 8 meters high of concrete slabs, condemned in 2004 by the International Court of Justice as illegal. The Israeli apartheid wall has sparked popular protests across the Palestinian West Bank. In the Palestinian village of Beilin, Palestinian protests take place each Friday against the Israeli wall, protests which have attracted attention from across the world. In Montreal, Canada, Beilin village has taken two corporations, Greenmount International and Green Park International, to court over the ongoing construction of Israeli Jewish-only settlements on the village land confiscated by the Israeli apartheid wall. Protests in the West Bank have spread to multiple villages across the territories, marking an increase in grassroots protests against the Israeli military occupation and the construction of the Israeli apartheid wall. In response, Israeli military forces have delivered severe repression, killing nonviolent activists, jailing political grassroots leaders from villages like Beilin. As popular protests grow and Israeli military repression against popular protests in the West Bank continues, I had the opportunity to speak with Palestinian writer and author Ali Abu Nima, founder of ElectronicIntifada.net, who offers his comments and reflections on the growth of popular protests in recent years in the Palestinian territories and the response of Israeli occupation forces. Well, we're joined on the line by Ali Abu Nima from Chicago. He's the co-founder of the Electronic Intifada, and he's an author, commentator on Palestine. Ali, to start, I was wondering if you could provide your thoughts on the current photo ops we're seeing, this peace process industry, as you call it. We're seeing the Palestinian Authority, Israeli political figures, American officials shaking hands, while on the ground in Palestine, we are seeing demonstrations in the West Bank and most recently in recent days in Gaza. If you could maybe talk about the contrast between these two realities.
Well, hi, Stefan. What we've seen over the past few weeks and months is the ongoing charade of the so-called peace process. I mean, I go further, I call it a hoax, because I think even the participants in it know that it's not real and know that it will not result in what it claims to want to result in, which is peace and a two-state solution. And I think the evidence for how, let's say, harmless the peace process is in Israeli eyes is the fact that the Israeli government, the extremist Israeli government of Benjamin Netanyahu, embraces it. And they keep saying, you know, let's continue with the talks, let's not stop them. And that's because they know full well that Israel will not be required to give up anything as a result of these U.S. brokered talks. And that this so-called peace process has been completely compatible with Israel's aggressive colonization and expansion of settlements in the occupied West Bank. Israel just ended a so-called settlement freeze, during which there was no settlement freeze. The figures that have come out from various Israeli sources reported last week by the Associated Press was that there was barely a 16% drop in the number of housing units under construction in the occupied West Bank. These are, of course, Jewish-only settlements built on expropriated land. And in fact, during the so-called freeze, thousands housing units were under construction in these settlements. Of course, even this fake freeze didn't apply to East Jerusalem. So the colonization process is what's continuing unabated. And on the ground, Palestinians are, of course, reacting to that. And we see, as has been going on for a long time, for years, the popular resistance in villages throughout the West Bank, but particularly along the line, the course of the Israeli apartheid wall, where a lot of land is being confiscated for settlement and for the wall. And we see Palestinians, and often they're joined by solidarity activists from other countries, staging nonviolent demonstrations every week. And what is an iron law of these situations, in a sense, is that the Israeli reaction is always violent. I mean, you can go on YouTube and look at the demonstrations in villages like Bil'in or Beit Omar or Nabi Saleh or other parts of the West Bank, and you will see that the Israelis regularly attack these demonstrations with tear gas, with rubber-coated steel bullets, and with live fire, and people have lost their lives engaging in nonviolence, and this continues on a daily basis. Recently, just a few days ago, a week ago, a Palestinian man was shot and injured when a group of Palestinians marched into their own lands in the Gaza Strip, which the Israeli occupation has declared off limits. Israel enforces a buffer zone within Gaza that deprives people there of access to their land, particularly farmland. And so people have been staging nonviolent marches into the land to reclaim it, to assert their right to enter their own land, and they're routinely shot at by the Israelis. So this is the dynamic we see of fake peace talks, sponsored by the United States, supported by the so-called international community, that provide a cover for Israeli colonization, and we see popular Palestinian resistance, opposition to the fake peace process, almost united Palestinian opposition to that, and the Israeli reaction has always been violence, no matter what method Palestinians, use to resist.
You've been following so closely the situation in the West Bank, the ongoing protests. They have expanded. Multiple villages now have weekly protests, if not more frequently, against the Israeli wall being constructed on Palestinian land. Can you talk about your observations on the development of this nonviolent protest movement in Palestine, and how significant is it in regards to the Palestinian issue generally?
Well, it is important because what it shows is that despite the surrender of the so-called Palestinian leaders, and I say so-called because I don't know who they represent. Mahmoud Abbas and Salam Fayyad don't represent the Palestinian people. They represent the United States, Canada, the European Union, and Israel, because that's their constituency. That's who funds them. That's basically who votes for them. But what it shows is the Palestinian people on the ground are alive. Their resistance is alive. They're determined. They're fighting for their lives, because in these villages, people are losing their land. I mean, the villages along the wall, most of their land is being taken. If you and your family have been farming your land for generations, caring for it, that's your livelihood. That's how you survive. That's how your whole community survives. That's how you pay for your children to get higher educations and to do better than you did. All of that is taken away when the land is gone. So that's what people are fighting against. They're fighting to protect their land after so much land has already been taken. And so I don't think this resistance is going to go away, and if anything, it's escalating. And I think it's happening also in tandem with global solidarity, because it's one thing for people on the outside to say, well, oh, that's very nice, you know, Palestinians are using nonviolence. That's not enough. We can't just applaud, and we can't just, you know, condemn and tell Palestinians you should resist this way and not that way. We have to provide active solidarity. And so the more international solidarity there is, the more space there is also for Palestinians in tandem with that and supported by that to resist on the ground using these kinds of methods. So I think that the global boycott, divestment, and sanctions movement is very important, and accountability in our countries. I'm sure that your listeners know about the case of the companies based in Quebec that are building settlements, that are taking part in building settlements in the West Bank, and the attempt to bring them to justice in Canada. And if that justice can't be brought through the courts, it's very important that it come through civil society pressure, through boycott, divestment, and sanctions and activism in Quebec and in Canada. So we have to see how our role here is absolutely linked to the struggle with people on the ground, because there are companies in Canada, in the United States, in other countries in Europe that are actively profiting from the occupation and deepening it. And so that's where, you know, Palestinians are relying on us also to engage in this struggle with them through BDS and other forms of solidarity work.
Could you describe the gap between a lot of media coverage that you've seen of the situation in the West Bank? We've seen articles, for example, that talk about the flourishing economy of Ramallah under Salim Fayyad. We've seen articles that talk about the easing of Israeli movement, control over Palestinian movement in the West Bank. Because you study the media very closely, I'm wondering if you could talk about any gaps you've seen between the media coverage of what's going on today in the West Bank or in Gaza and what is actually happening on the ground.
It's more than just a gap where there's a reality and the media aren't reporting the reality. There's actually a fictional account of what's going on in the West Bank that is being actively promoted through the media. And it is this fictional story of, you know, a flourishing West Bank economy, of state and institution building under Salam Fayyad, the alleged prime minister of the Palestinian Authority. I say alleged because no one elected him. He was illegally installed, and he is not prime minister of anything. And so we've seen all these stories and all these columnists, you know, New York Times columnists like Thomas Friedman and Roger Cohen and many, many others, there's many examples, going over and saying, oh, all this wonderful state building and Salam Fayyad is laying the grounds for a Palestinian state and there's a flourishing economy and entrepreneurship and all this neoliberal hasbara, this neoliberal propaganda of this, you know, a flourishing West Bank economy, which of course is supposed to contrast with the poverty-ridden Gaza Strip, which is under the rule of Hamas, with it, you know, the interior of Gaza. The reality is that this is a hoax. There is no West Bank boom. All of the economic growth which the World Bank and IMF have recorded in the West Bank is a result of economic aid. And this is emergency humanitarian aid to try to support the population because of the devastated economy and the destruction of the economic base in the West Bank by the occupation. So the 8% so-called growth in the West Bank is entirely foreign aid. And it's not development aid that, again, is rebuilding the economic base. It is aid that is simply palliative, providing humanitarian aid. And this so-called growth also comes on top of an economic base that has been systematically devastated. We just observed the 10th anniversary of the Second Palestinian Uprising, the Second Intifada, and the economy in the occupied West Bank and Gaza Strip has shrunk by something like 40% in the past 10 years. So any growth is coming from a devastated economic base. Interestingly, the World Bank figures that came out recently found much higher economic growth in the Gaza Strip. But again, we have to be careful. This doesn't mean that, you know, somehow the Gaza Strip is booming or people are doing well. This is from a devastated economic base. And a lot of this is sort of the tunnel trade and that sort of thing. But what you have in Gaza and in the West Bank, in Gaza you have something like two-thirds of the population, according to the UN that is systematically food insecure. And these people weren't hit by a tsunami or an earthquake. They're food insecure, and you have rising malnutrition because of Israeli policies of destroying the agricultural base, destroying the irrigation system, making the land off-limit through declaring these buffer zones, banning exports, limiting imports of fertilizer, of agricultural equipment, and so on. This is why people are suffering. It's not because they're not capable farmers. The Gaza Strip, in fact, was a very productive area before the blockade. And similarly, in the West Bank, Save the Children did a study a few months ago, which actually found that in rural areas of the West Bank, malnutrition and food insecurity is actually higher in many areas than in the Gaza Strip. That is the reality. And the fact that there is a small bubble of nouveau riche and people who are benefiting directly or indirectly from the occupation centered in Ramallah, I don't want to demonize Ramallah, of course. There are also many poor people in Ramallah who are suffering from the occupation very deeply, like Palestinians elsewhere. But nevertheless, there is a small class that has benefited from the occupation, and at the expense of the rest of the Palestinians, really. And this is now being held up as somehow, a sign of success, the fact that there's a building boom. And, there was even a story in Haaretz a few months ago about how the booming sale of luxury cars is an indicator of, economic growth and well-being in the West Bank. I think we all know that in many countries, the number of luxury cars is inverse proportion to the amount of poverty in the country. And so we see this West Bank entity propped up by Israel and the so-called international community mimicking the types of neoliberal regimes we see around the world, where a tiny elite benefits and the rest suffer. But this is in a context, on top of that, of military occupation and active colonization by Israel that is even more devastating. And that's why the nonviolent struggle, the BDS, is so important, because those are the means by which we can begin to stop that and reverse that and try to move things in a direction that actually benefits the people.
When we talk about this protest movement in the West Bank, there are, of course, a lot of people who have been deeply affected by the wall, losing their land. And beyond that, Palestinians have lost their lives protesting against the wall. Bassam Abu Rahma in Bilin was killed about a year and a half ago with a tear gas canister that struck him in the heart. I'm just wondering if you could maybe reflect on what this nonviolent protest movement in the West Bank has faced, the severity of repression. There's also many people who now are in prison, key activists from Bilin and other villages, like Abdullah Abu Rahma, who Amnesty International is campaigning for. So I'm just wondering if you could reflect on the severity of the Israeli repression.
That's right. And what that reminds us is that nonviolence is not the easy way out. And, people make it sound like, oh, do nonviolence because, it's nicer and it's... No, nonviolence is very dangerous, because the Israeli response has always been, without exception, extreme violence. And, people can see it. They can go to the website of Bil'in. They can go, on Twitter and follow some of the people who are there on the ground and, see the videos and the pictures. You go out in a nonviolent demonstration or action, the Israelis will shoot you. This is happening in Gaza with the marches into the so-called buffer zones, the death zones Israel has declared. People will shoot you. People are in prison. And what's even more disturbing, and we've reported on this on the Electronic Intifada, is that the Palestinian Authority now, which is collaborating with the Israelis, is actually helping the Israelis to try to repress these protests. And so there have been activists and organizers who have been arrested or detained or harassed by the Palestinian Authority as well. So the repression is very, very severe. Nonviolence is very, very dangerous. And so it's important, I think, that the solidarity work around the world be escalated, because that's what also puts a light on what's happening and makes it harder for the Israelis to act with total impunity as they are now. So it's really in tandem. Palestinians are calling for international solidarity because the roots of the occupation manifests itself there on their land, but the roots of the occupation are here in our countries, as I talked about, through the companies that profit from it, for example, the construction firms in Quebec that are helping Israel build the settlements. So really the resistance to it has to be global, because the occupation itself has global roots.
Thanks so much for your time, Ali.
You're welcome. Thank you.
You've been listening to an interview with Palestinian author and writer Ali Abu Nima of electronicintifada.net. In the interview, Ali Abu Nima commented on the surge of popular protests across the Palestinian West Bank in opposition to the ongoing Israeli military occupation. Protests voicing opposition to the ongoing construction of Israel's apartheid wall that weaves through Palestinian territory in the West Bank, a razor wire electrified fence in some regions, and in others towering up to 8 meters high concrete slabs that cut up the Palestinian territories of the West Bank. The Israeli security wall was condemned in 2004 as illegal by the International Court of Justice, and subsequently, the United Nations General Assembly appealed to the Israeli government to dismantle the wall. In face of the ongoing construction of the apartheid wall on Palestinian land, protests have erupted across the West Bank in villages like Beilin, which stages protests each Friday and has attracted attention from across the world. Beilin also launched a lawsuit in Canada, where two Quebec-based companies, Greenmount International and Green Park International, are currently constructing Israeli Jewish-only colonies on Beilin lands confiscated by the construction of the apartheid wall. This interview examined the growth of popular protests throughout the West Bank and the corresponding repression administered by the Israeli occupation forces against popular protests and organizing throughout West Bank territories. For more information on Beilin Village, visit www.beilin-village.org. That's Beilin-village.org. And for information on protests happening across the West Bank and Gaza, visit the International Solidarity Movement at www.palsolidarity.org. That's palsolidarity.org. And to read the writings of Ali Abu Nima and other writers and commentators from around the world, visit www.electronicintifada.net. That's www.electronicintifada.net. This interview has been recorded and produced for CKUT Radio in Montreal by Stefan Christophe.